Today on Maine Calling, libraries today, much more than shelves full of books. What are libraries for? A long time ago, they were primarily for borrowing books. But today, libraries serve as community hubs, especially here in Maine. Sure, you might find books there, lots of them, but you might also find power tools or personal electronics. Your library might help you with your taxes or your job hunt. Your kids might go to summer camp at your local library. And libraries are always changing. I'm Jennifer Rooks. A new PBS documentary about the public library in America, Free for All, debuts tomorrow evening. Today we discuss the evolution of libraries, and we want to hear from you. How do you use yours? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville, and by Verrill, committed to delivering trusted legal services in Maine and throughout the Northeast for 163 years. Learn more at verrill-law.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Libraries today are many things to many people, and of course, they are free. A new PBS film, Free for All, celebrates the public library. It debuts on Maine Public Television tomorrow, and today we are going to talk about the evolving role of Maine's libraries. Joining me, Marijke Visser, who is Director of Library Development with the Maine State Library, Amy Weishart, President of the Maine Library Association and Director of Northeast Harbor Library, and Kelly Blue, Youth Services Director for the Portland Public Library and a board member of the Maine Library Association. We invite you to join the conversation. How do you use your library? Have you been there in a while? Are you looking for help finding information about your library? We have lots of librarians on the show today, and they're very good at helping people. Share your comments and questions. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to all of you. I'm going to start this conversation by talking about sort of what's in the news right now, and especially what's in the news for the Maine State Library. Marijke, I know that you are dealing with cuts from the federal government, part of the big DOGE initiative, and you're on the panel today instead of your director, Lori Fisher, because she is really tied up dealing with trying to figure out the fallout of the federal funding cuts. So why don't I start with you, if you can just tell us what you know, how you're trying to figure it out, where you all are right now in terms of the Maine State Library.
Sure. Thank you. And thank you for having me today. And you're right. Lori is busy. It's a very fluid situation where things change at least daily, if not multiple times during the day. And I just want to be clear that it's not exactly a funding cut, but we haven't been able to access our federal grant that we get every year. We've gotten it from the beginning of the program. It's about a third of our budget, and it has been more or less frozen since the executive order that went into place that was looking at really cutting back on the Institute of Museum and Library Services, which is the federal agency that provides that grant to Maine and all the other states across the country.
So it's been frozen. There's a chance you could get it back, but in the meantime, you've had to lay off people, right?
We have, and that's because of the way that the layoff process works at the state. Because we couldn't access funds to pay payroll, we had to start the layoff process, and it's been devastating. Actually, it's been really horrible.
And I know that the Maine State Library is closed right now. Services suspended till May 5th.
That's right. And so because we're going through this process, we really have had to look at which services we're providing to the public and what we're realistically able to maintain while we're going through the process. We'll also be retrenching once the process is over. And so to make things easier, frankly, on the staff that are here, we've shut our doors to the public.
Okay. And I know that you're not able to say what services will be available in the future, but for people who have not been to the Maine State Library, it's on the campus that also houses the State House and the State Office building, and you share a building with the State Archive. How is the Maine State Library different than a community library? I know that there are some really rare and special books there. You all also provide services, spoken word books for people who have trouble hearing, seeing. What are some of the other programs that are different that make the Maine State Library a state library?
Sure. So we, I guess I'll talk about all three of our departments and start maybe with our public outreach. That's that you were alluding to, the department that provides services for people who are visually impaired or have a print disability. They can't turn the page or hold a book. And so people who are eligible, we provide them with talking books. So that's one service that we do use our federal funding for, and we're anticipating that it will be impacted in some way. Another thing that we do, it's about almost 90% of the state is served by a public library in some way. So that leaves about, well, it's actually 8% left over that don't have direct services from libraries. So we provide books by mail. So if you actually can't get to a library or not served by one, we provide the same access that you is walking into a library, but we mail them out to you. So that's another one of our outreach services. We collect all state documents and municipal documents. We do digitization projects for community organizations, historical societies. So to really capture Maine's cultural history is something that we do. Another, my department that I'm most proud of, if I do say so myself, is we work directly with our 257 public libraries and support people like Amy and Kelly, who will be talking soon, with consultations and continuing education, professional development. So that's something that we do. We do a lot of statewide resource sharing. So for people who do use their library, you can access books digitally, you can listen to audiobooks. Your library card is good 24/7, 365. And so that's something that we promote mostly so libraries across the state have the same resources regardless of where they're physically situated. So small libraries, urban libraries, our island libraries, all have their patrons all have access to the same resources.
All right, Marijke. And Amy, I know you wanted to jump in there.
Yeah, so I just wanted to add to what Marijke has already said, and thank you for having me on, that the Maine State Library really provides really important infrastructure to libraries throughout the state. And I would say statewide library services are especially essential for small and rural public libraries. So as Marijke mentioned, the state library facilitates resource sharing through interlibrary loan, ensures that even the smallest library has access to materials from all over the state. And that is a really efficient service and a way for these tiny little libraries to provide a really broad depth of service to their patrons. Maine is one of the most rural states in the country, as we know. And so we are really disproportionately impacted by any potential federal funding cut that comes through. And also the statewide services that are the digital resources the state provides are also essential to Mainers in really, well, everywhere, of course, but in rural areas especially. So ebooks, digital research databases that are really essential for students and really provides access. And I would say the Maine State Library is connects libraries throughout the state and provides really essential infrastructure that this funding challenge has really made this the support that we receive, it's created a lot of chaos and it's made things so inefficient, and there's a lot of unknowns. So every individual public library director, every librarian in the state right now is just wondering what's happening, and the future is pretty uncertain. So that's a big concern for the Maine Library Association and something we're actively working to address.
I'd like to take a little bit of a step back, Amy, and the film that's going to debut on PBS tomorrow night, I understand some people have seen it already. It's been showing in some libraries, but will be on television tomorrow night, Maine Public Television. Looks a little bit at the history of libraries. All you have to do is drive around Maine to see some of the beautiful Carnegie libraries. So I'm wondering if you can give us just a little bit of a history lesson. When did the idea of the public library become commonplace in the United States? And is it regional? Are there more public libraries in New England than there are, say, in Idaho or Florida? Or is this pretty much everywhere?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I did get a chance to see an advanced screening of this documentary, and I definitely, it's a great documentary. I recommend it. We screened it at my library. And so the history of public libraries, really libraries in the United States initially were subscription-based, so you had to pay to be a member of the library. So it was a pretty significant shift to provide free public libraries, public library resources. One piece that I learned from the documentary that I wasn't aware of was that Andrew Carnegie, when he funded libraries, he had many libraries built throughout the country. There was a stipulation that the operating budget had to come from taxes. So he was building a base of not only library buildings, but also the support had to come from the local community. So that is a pretty significant shift, and definitely provides really great access for people. Libraries also were one of the first professions open to women. So a lot of women were library leaders in the late 1800s, early 1900s, as public libraries became much more common throughout the country. In terms of New England, I would say we have probably more local public libraries than other parts of the country. So many parts of the country have a countywide library system. Here in Maine, we have over 250 public libraries. So we have some very small libraries, and the funding for libraries is very localized. And so that is somewhat different from other state models.
All right. Well, you're speaking to us from a small library in Northeast Harbor. Kelly is joining us from what I believe is the state's largest library. And Kelly, the Portland Public Library isn't just one building, right? Even though people might be familiar with that spectacular facade on Congress Street.
No, it isn't. The downtown library on Monument Square is our largest building, but we have branches throughout the neighborhoods in Portland, and including a branch on Peaks Island that is only accessible by ferry. We also have a bookmobile that travels to neighborhoods in Portland that do not have access to a library, and a small outreach department that serves homebound patrons.
How do you and your colleagues, other members of the staff, think about the public library in Portland? Do you use words like, people come here to borrow books, or do you use different kinds of, I don't know, do you think of it as community building? I don't want to put words in your mouth. How do you, when you're having a meeting and you're deciding what to do next, what are your goals? What is your philosophy?
I think the first thing that we think about is patron-driven services. So knowing our community, knowing who is coming into our building and maybe who we aren't seeing, and how we can serve those unique populations. So it's a very customer service-driven profession, public librarianship. And I would agree that, I'm almost tired of telling people who haven't been to a library in a while that it's not just books, or people that dismiss it as just books. It's so much more than that. If you come downtown, especially any day of the week after school, we have a vibrant teen library that is filled with 50 to 60 Portland public school students that use the library all day, because we're right next door to the Boys and Girls Club. We're right next door to Portland High School. We're up the hill from King Middle School. And so that's incredible. We have free events, large events, small events throughout the week. And people use the library for a variety of reasons. Our children's library has a play area that has become a popular place for parents to come and just have like parent time, where they can just hang out and meet other parents. So while we are books and we have plenty of those, and we hope that people are making use of our materials, it is more of a community destination that's absolutely free and open and welcoming to everyone.
All right, well, I'm going to go to a call. Barbara is calling from Belfast. Hi, Barbara, go ahead.
Hi there. I'm a social worker. I use the Maine State Library to provide books on tape to a person who believed he was illiterate. He borrowed those tapes, and I didn't hear another thing about it for months. And then he announced that he had discovered that indeed he could read, and he started back to school. He has since gotten his GED and is fully employed. The Maine State Library was critical in changing this person's life on a personal, on a permanent basis. So I'm just calling to say thank you, Maine State Library. Keep doing what you're doing.
Barbara, thank you for that moving call. And Marika, it's interesting because I think that those books that are spoken books were intended originally for people who are visually impaired, but we've just heard about a way that somebody else used them to change his life.
Yeah, I love that story, and it's one reason why I love talking about libraries, but why I think libraries are a little bit unique in terms of how we provide services. So I can't tell you how many times I've had someone, one of the libraries like Amy's or Kelly's, tell me about someone who came in to do one thing and they went away with something else. And I think fundamentally, libraries are about connecting people to opportunity. So in this example that we just heard, somebody came in, or someone was started out at one path and ended up getting a job. So we know our libraries are kind of continually connecting people to resources to do a resume or search online to find a job, to do digital skills training to apply for jobs, those kind of things. We have people who may not have a good internet connection at home, but all of the libraries that participate in what we call the Maine School and Library Network have really robust Wi-Fi and internet, even in the more rural and far-flung places. So we have people who run a business out of the library, who may use the library's internet to create their website and do their marketing and all of that kind of thing. So I think also the idea of libraries being responsive to their communities is something I started to hear Kelly say, but we really are a mirror and we reflect the priorities in our community. So many of it is thinking about how to prepare our young people for jobs of tomorrow is another thing that we think that we talk about quite a bit. I think it's important to look at also that window of opportunity for libraries. So, I'm sorry, I kind of lost my train of thought there, but thinking about how libraries are responding to the challenges in their community. So, whether food insecurity is a big one, we have libraries that are providing food pantries, also personal care products. So, that kind of thing. Let homelessness, people dealing with in unaffordable housing. Unfortunately, a lot of libraries are dealing with people who are struggling with addiction and all of the things that that kind of cascades into. So thinking, I just look at that as how we're helping people kind of get over those social challenges that they may be having.
Barbara, thank you so much for that call. We are going to go to a break. If you would also like to call, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're talking about the many roles that libraries play today. My guest today, Amy Weishart, director of the Northeast Harbor Library and president of the Maine Library Association. Kelly Blue directs youth services at the Portland Public Library. She's also with the Maine Library Association. And Marijke Visser is with the Maine State Library. She's Director of Library Development there. We invite you to join the conversation. Do you have questions about the services at your local library? Do you want to tell a story about a way that you used your library in a way that you did not expect? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or find us on Facebook or Instagram. Calling in now is Beth Anderson, who is president of the Maine Association of School Libraries. Thanks for calling in, Beth.
Hi, thanks for having me.
For those of us of a certain age and remember what our school library was like, how does a school library look different today?
Oh, well, we still have plenty of books, of course, but we do teach. We meet the needs of kids where they are today, trying to prepare them for the future. One of our biggest roles, I would say, is we teach digital citizenship. So how to be responsible and safe online, finding a healthy balance between online activities, having personal devices, and then putting them aside and doing other activities as well. We teach, you know, research skills and collaborate with teachers on a daily basis. And we also have a lot of robotics in our libraries. So oftentimes when you walk into a school library, you need to be careful where you step because we have robots being coded and driven all around the library. So it's a very exciting, dynamic place.
You know, I know that libraries for K through 12 public schools are constantly being pulled into political debates. We've had Maine Calling programs about book banning and battles over divisive issues. I'm wondering, right now, are your librarians, those, your colleagues, talking about this? Is this something that's causing problems for them in individual school libraries?
We haven't had many challenges or bans this year on books. So that is a positive thing, but it is always something that we continue to discuss and talk about. We believe, of course, that our library should reflect all our students, and students should be able to walk in and see books that reflect their interests, and they can see who they are. They have those windows, and we also want kids to be able to learn about other diverse perspectives. So we do. We have very well curated collections, but it is very hard too, because there is always that potential for a challenge, and sometimes they have become very, very divisive in communities. And a lot of times you'd have just one librarian in a school, or sometimes in our smaller districts, you have one librarian serving K through 12, and it feels like a lot of that is directed at them. But in the Maine Association of School Libraries, American Association of School Librarians, American Library Association, and also we also collaborate with the Maine State Library and MLA. We work together as a group to make sure that all school librarians have the resources and the support that they need if they face those challenging times.
Well, Beth, thank you so much for calling in. Beth Anderson, the president of the Maine Association of School Libraries. We'll go up to Seal Cove near you, Kelly, and go to Barbara. Hi, Barbara. Go ahead.
Hi, Barbara. Hi, Barbara. Thank you.
Near Amy. Go ahead. Go ahead, Barbara.
Okay. I'm a writer, and I've used libraries in an absolutely wonderfully supportive way, which is to put a draft of a manuscript, for instance, most recently in the Camden Library, and get feedback from, it's all anonymous, so they don't have to worry about telling me, you know, that I haven't written a good book. Fortunately, nobody's done that. But I just wanted to throw that out as an idea and also ask the librarians if that's something they would welcome.
Barbara, thank you. Amy, Kelly, thoughts about that? I'll go to you, Amy. If an author comes to you and says, I have a draft, would you ask people to read it and give me feedback? Is that something you do?
I would say we have had a writer's group off and on over the years, and that's something a lot of public libraries do. It's a great resource for writers. So I would probably, you know, try to form a peer group, and that can be a really powerful way for libraries to serve communities. As Marijke mentioned, we're very responsive to what communities are members are looking for. And that's a great way to bring people together and form a community of like-minded people who can support.
Well, Barbara, good luck with your next book. Let's see, we'll go up to Eastport and Nichols. Hi, Nichols, go ahead.
Hello. Well, I've always used the library my whole life. In fact, my very first job at the age of 14 was as an assistant in the library. And so today I'm the same way. I'm just compulsive on library use. I've actually read 44 books on Donald Trump. They've come from different places. They're not all in the local library, but they've been very helpful in getting me these books, and that's been an interesting exercise. I like to use the Wi-Fi. I can use it from the parking lot if the library is closed, because it goes that far. There was a time when I had a terrible fall down the steps. I was pushed by a large dog, and I had a concussion. And then I wasn't allowed to read at all, so I was able to get books on tape and listen to them. So I've just used a library my entire life and have absolutely no idea what I would do if there wasn't one.
Well, Nichols, thank you for calling and sharing your perspective from Eastport. Kelly, I saw you nodding, and I'm wondering if you wanted to add some of the ways in which people use the library that, you know, Nichols never thought that she'd be listening to a book because of a concussion. What are some other, you're working with teenagers, and teenagers, boy, yeah, they get concussions. So what are some things that might surprise our listener?
Sure. So I work with birth through age 19, so the full spectrum of youth and their caregivers. You know, as Marika mentioned, helping develop workforce skills for young people. We actually have a large teen job fair tomorrow to prepare teens to get summer jobs with 25 local employers, and also job counseling and resume help. That's going to be in our auditorium. We do that twice a year. So I think that's a great example of something that people might not think libraries are doing. And again, that's responsive to our teen users who we know are looking for summer jobs and have asked us for help on how to find jobs. So that's directly responsive to what they're looking for. For children, you know, I know everybody thinks of story time and summer reading, which are essential and wonderful programs, but we also offer things like reading to a certified therapy dog for older students who might be shy about speaking out loud or need to work on their reading skills in a non-judgmental space. So we have a therapy dog that comes in every other week. We have to fight staff and keep them from coming in because it's not for them. It's for the kids. And we also partner with local organizations like Portland Ballet or 317 Maine to offer programs like creative movement. So the ballet brings students in, and and it's one of our most popular programs. We almost have to move it to a bigger space, and or music programs for toddlers. So, and again, all of this is free. And another thing we do for teens is we bring in, after school, when we're at our busiest, we bring in local organizations who teens might be interested in talking to for like pop-up libraries. So we've had the League of Women Voters come in around election time to talk to kids about what their voting rights are or how to register to vote. We have Planned Parenthood come in once a week or once a month to answer like non-judgmental. You can ask any question you want from a professional health educator. So those are examples of things that we offer that people might not think of for young people.
On the line with us now is Sonia Durney with the University of New England, where she is scholarly communication research and teaching librarian. Thanks for calling in, Sonia.
Sure. Thanks for spending the time to talk about libraries.
Yeah, so we've been talking a lot about public libraries and communities and how they've changed over the years. What about colleges and universities? Has the same kind of evolution been taking place?
Absolutely, yes. Lots of evolution in academic libraries. We have 33 academic libraries here in Maine between the UMaine system, the Maine Community College system, and 15 private institutions. One of the big changes I would say that you probably see in most of those libraries is we still do have books, but so many resources have moved online. So libraries provide access to tons of information in databases. So these databases will have academic articles, books, and there's a lot of information out there. So our role really as academic librarians is to ensure that our students are information literate, that they know how to find, evaluate, and use information ethically and effectively. So for instance, here at UNE, I have the opportunity to work with students who will go on to become doctors, marine scientists, or you know, many other careers. And we spend our time navigating these information databases, which many of them are provided to all Maine residents via the Maine State Library. And so this information literacy isn't just academic, it's really critical to building healthy communities. Like for instance, I want my doctor to be able to give me informed, evidence-based medical advice. I want environmental advocates to be able to advance environmental research and help shape public policy. So really access to that credible information is the key to that. But so that's one thing that's different about academic libraries now, I would say, is most of the research that we're doing is online. And of course, there's still books and we have wonderful archives, but I think that's probably one of the biggest changes you'd see.
Yeah, it seems to me that maybe a lot of college students don't even have to physically go to the library to find the information that, oh boy, I had to. I had to, you know, use a microfiche machine or maybe even give a little slip of paper to a librarian to find an old book. Is the way in which, do you find that many students are using so many services online from their dorm room that the reason people are actually in the library is different?
Yes and no. Some students still just love coming to the library. I'm in the back office now, and I can tell you the library is full of students studying. We work really hard to make it a warm and inclusive place where students feel welcome, and we make sure that they know that there are librarians here to help them. But certainly for the students that want to work from their dorm room, they are welcome to set up appointments with the librarian. We're happy to Zoom with people. We also have a chat service, so students can send us chat questions, and we can work back and forth with them that way.
All right. Well, Sonia, thanks for calling in. Sonia Durney, Research and Teaching Librarian for the University of New England. I'm going to go to an email here. Let's see. My goodness, I have too many screens open in front of me. Here we go. From Lisa, I am a lifelong library lover, which is perhaps not a surprise given that I'm a professor of English. Since 2019, I've been on the board of directors at Curtis Memorial Library in Brunswick and cannot stress how critical our library is to our community. Of course, it has a wonderful collection of books, but Curtis is also a warming center when the electricity goes out in the winter. It provides free Wi-Fi and small study spaces. It has a library of things from which people can borrow everything from a tortilla press to a power washer. It hosts a repair cafe every month where volunteers repair everything from jewelry to furniture and small appliances. That's on top of running the state's first electric bookmobile and providing one of the few indoor spaces where the public can gather regardless of ideology. In sum, our library is integral to a thriving democracy. So thank you so much for that, Lisa. I'm going to seize on one little thing because we haven't talked about this yet. And Amy, I'll go to you. It is a big trend in libraries, isn't it, to be able to borrow other things. She mentioned a tortilla press or a power washer, but to think of a library as a place to borrow things from, but not only books.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a big trend. And I would say Curtis Memorial has been a leader in some of those initiatives, and they're doing an excellent job. But many libraries throughout the state are now offering a library of things, seed libraries, loaning equipment, baking supplies, crafting supplies. And it's this idea that's fundamental to libraries that resource sharing is important. These might be things that you only use occasionally, you only need it once or twice, you can borrow it rather than purchase. So it really does benefit communities. And that's another way that I think libraries customize their services for those communities that they're in. My library, we just hosted a tool swap last week that was very successful. You bring in an old tool that you're not using, other people can take it. So the initiatives like that are really exciting.
All right. Pamela, an email. I'm a retired librarian. I'm very concerned about the cuts to IMLS. It is my understanding that these cuts will affect library internet connections, interlibrary loan, and talking books in Maine. Can you address this issue, please? Marika, are you able to address Pamela's questions?
Yes, I can. So again, I might be wordsmithing, but I think it's important to remember that it's not specifically cuts. The funding is not available at this time. So we're hoping that through the advocacy of our different associations that we'll be able to flip that switch. So the state library, in part, Amy was saying in the beginning, because our libraries are so spread out across the state, we use our federal funding for state-wide services for that infrastructure that Amy was also talking about in the very beginning. Part of that infrastructure is our school and library network that supplies the internet. That is not funded through our federal funding. It's funded through a different federal program and the Maine PUC. So the internet access is not directly impacted. What's impacted that's related to that is staffing. Our staff person who supports the libraries and with all of their technology, that part is impacted. I think in the beginning talk about our books by mail and our Talking Books program. We're very concerned about those services because they connect people who may have difficulty using a library. And I know we're more than just providing the service. The staff person here who works on that the most, she actually has to shut her door all the time because she's talking to the patrons for the Talking Books program. And she's not necessarily talking to them about the next book that they want to read, although that's part of it. She's also listening about their dog or connecting with their family and hearing about their grandchildren. It's really a lifeline for these people who depend on those services. And that's the kind of thing that may be impacted.
Hmm. We are talking about libraries in Maine. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're talking about the expanded role libraries play in our communities. And a note, there's a new PBS film about libraries airing tomorrow. That's April 29th on Maine Public Television. It is called Free for All. Joining me, Kelly Blue with the Portland Public Library Youth Services, Marika Visser with the Maine State Library, and Amy Weishart with the Maine Library Association and the Northeast Harbor Library. Share your comments and questions by email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or call us at 1-800-399-3566. Amy, tell us about Share Your Story.
Thank you. Yeah. So I wanted to mention that the Maine Library Association we've been actively working to support funding for libraries, both the federal funding that comes to us and support for libraries statewide. So we've heard some great stories here today from callers, and we have a Share Your Story initiative. We have a form linked on the homepage of our website at mainelibraries.org, and we're asking for people to share their stories about how their library has benefited them, impact stories, things that you really appreciate about your library, especially some of those services like interlibrary loan that really the statewide services that support all of us. And we can use that when we advocate with legislators, both at the federal and the state level, to help them understand the importance of libraries. And stories are very powerful. We also have been working very actively with our congressional delegation in Washington. They've all been very supportive of federal funding. And this funding, just to clarify too, has been congressionally approved. So we're working to try to get funds that Congress has already approved, released to the state. And then we're also now in a process of supporting funding for next year. So we're both not receiving the funds that have already been approved and working to get new funds. So also reaching out to our legislators in Washington is a really great way to support libraries.
We'll go to Jay calling from North Yarmouth. Hi, Jay. Go ahead.
Hi. I'd like to bring up a quick point. In my town, I have heard specific ideas from conservatives, one of which is to reduce taxation by changing libraries from public benefit to a private fee for service. Instead of getting a free CD, you would pay for a certain, like if you want to borrow a DVD, it would be a price. I am against this. I think the library is a wonderful place for community. And I want to say that this is a bad idea. Thank you.
Well, Jay, thanks so much. Is this something I'm going to ask my panel that is happening in other parts of the country? Is that why people have this idea? We got looks of confusion. I don't think so.
I think we're all kind of like, I think we agree with the caller. It's not at the core of what a public library is. I think that maybe Amy said in the beginning, most of library funding is local, and local libraries are up against the fire department, other services. And so I think there's always a battle, which is why having people have their stories to talk about how important and impactful the library is so important. So I understand that there are challenges to the funding source. In Maine, I'll just point out about half of our libraries are nonprofit libraries, and the other half are municipal departments. And that is fairly unique to New England, I think. But funding is always a bit of a challenge.
Jay, thank you so much. I did some interesting reading this morning, and I don't know which of you wants to sort of respond to this. I had read that about 10 years ago, there was a lot of worry about the declining use of libraries. But then recently, there's been a surge in, nationally at least, in younger people, Gen Z, using the library, Gen Z and millennials. And I'm wondering if you all are seeing that reflected in your libraries. Are you seeing more and more younger people coming in than maybe a generation ago? Kelly, I'll go to you.
I'm not sure if that, I mean, I can't speak with statistics, but anecdotally, as somebody who's been working in libraries since 2012, I'm not sure if that ever stopped or if we've, I just the idea that this generation or generations of young people coming up are strictly interested in digital, which was a big thing that people were fearing about a decade ago, is just not true. This generation does both. They can do many things at once. So they are very, I would say that there's been a huge boom in publishing for what people call young adults or like that. And I do think that's important. I think one area that we all strive to catch is we want to create lifelong library learners or like lifelong library users. And usually when kids go off to college, we might not see them again between the ages of 20 or when they start to have families. So I do think that we are seeing more young single people of that generation using the library as a resource for materials, but also for the services that we offer.
All right, and Amy, I have a feeling that the summer season is the super busy one for you. And I'm wondering if you're seeing young people coming in and checking out books in numbers that are greater than in recent years. I know that there are a bunch of 20-somethings in my life, and they share information about books on social media, but they still like to hold the physical book in their hand.
Yeah, thanks for the question. I would say, you know, we don't, as Kelly mentioned, we don't keep statistics on, you know, age groups who use the library specifically, except for, you know, children versus adults. But we do see quite a few younger adults, using the library, especially a lot of parents who now are bringing their children to the library. That's a great touch point and connection. And I was certainly struck by last year, we did a strategic plan and did a focus group with some parents of young children. And they all said, you know, they value the library for their kids for the in-person connections that the kids have. They want to see their kids on using less technology, actually using the library more. And they're really focused on those experiences and building connections with other parents. It's really, libraries bring people together in many different ways, but I think that can be a really important touch point really for all ages, young people, especially if they're feeling like they need a sense of community. They can join a library book group. They can come in and check out books or take part in library programming and educational resources. And that's really a powerful impact that libraries have throughout communities.
We'll go to Henry calling from Canaan. Hi, Henry. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you very much for letting me call in. I just want to give our public library in Canaan, Maine, a heads up. Very nice place. Originally, it was a one-room schoolhouse about 5 miles from the center of the town. In the early 1900s, they dragged it up with oxen to the center of town. put a little front porch on it and had a library. Recently, we rebuilt a new library. But it's a nice, small little town and a wonderful little library.
Well, Henry, thank you for... Yeah, go ahead.
And we do a lot of things. They have a nice board of directors. They sell plants in the spring. People donate for yard sale activities there. And they have tons of children's stuff almost every weekend.
Well, thank you for calling in from Canaan, Maine. We haven't had a call from Canaan in a while. I appreciate it, Henry. Thank you. We have an email here from Ellie. The library helped me graduate college. I wanted to take this opportunity to share my most sincere gratitude for the South Portland Public Library. Oh, I'm getting choked up. As a 35-year-old single mother living in a small apartment, I have spent countless hours working toward my nursing degree and graduating next week with a graduate degree. The library has been integral in my ability to access a quiet, safe place to study. Thank you to the staff at the South Portland Library for everything you do. So who wants to respond to that? Who else can respond without being choked up?
I think the choking up piece is huge, right? We all love to tell those stories. So I appreciate hearing that. I actually, in the notes that I jotted down, I had a story about someone who was also getting a nursing degree and was juggling working with doing that and used the library Wi-Fi to complete her degree. And I'm sure Amy has those stories too, but it's so meaningful when someone comes back into the library and lets you know, oh, you actually made a difference and now I have a job, or you actually made a difference and now, you know, I've finished my degree.
And I will say there's so many stories about many public libraries will help people fill out job applications online. Many people who don't have digital literacy skills, maybe they don't even have an email account set up. So many jobs now you have to apply online. And I think almost every public library can tell a story about somebody who came in and said, I have no idea how to do this. Could you please help me? And that's what we do. We're a helping profession. We do a lot of digital literacy on the fly. We do classes. And that is essential for people if they want to get employment. They need that assistance.
Or they might need a space to... Oh, sorry.
Yeah, go on, Kelly.
No, this ties into something that Marika wanted me to bring up, which is that we were the beneficiary of one of many libraries in the state that was a beneficiary of a remote work in libraries grant. And many libraries have used that to make their spaces more welcoming to people that need a space to work, to do work, to apply for jobs, to interview for jobs, to get that digital literacy expertise. And Portland is unique in that we use those funds to build a remote work for families space. So it's a family-friendly, child-friendly space that is meant for parents like Ellie to do work while their children are nearby being engaged in activities that, you know, are welcoming for them. So I'm very grateful for that grant and looking forward to seeing it to fruition. But that's it.
I'm going to go to Carol calling from Portland. Carol, we're a little tight on time, so if you could be quick, that'd be great.
I will be quick. Yes, I'm blind, visually impaired, and rely heavily on the Maine State Library for talking books and for the services they provide, and am very, very concerned about the cut in funds that I understand is eminently sitting at the door, because those of us that need those services, whether print disabled or however we use them, and it is huge. It would be a huge loss. What will we do?
Carol, how often do you take out a book, a talking book?
I get them in cassettes. I have three cassettes cartridges right now, which have 10, 20 books on them, each of them. And I go through them and return them and get another cartridge. I request it, call in and talk to wonderful people there and get those cartridges so that I can read a talking book. And also, Ed Bard is available too, which is downloading Braille books. There's a whole bunch of services behind the scenes that those of us that need them receive them. And what is going on in Washington is cutting those needs without any thought to what it's doing to the rest, to the people that receive them.
Carol, thank you so much for your call. And Marika, no surprise to hear from her.
No, breaks my heart.
Yeah, thank you for your call. And you will be the last call of the hour because we're out of time. Thank you so much, all of you, for joining us today. Marika Visser, Director of Library Development with the Maine State Library. Amy Weishart, President of the Maine Library Association and Director of the Northeast Harbor Library. And Kelly Blue, Director of Youth Services at the Portland Public Library. Today's sound engineer was Sandra Harris. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. And again, tomorrow on Independent Lens is the film that we were talking about. It'll be on Maine Public Television. It's called Free for All. Tomorrow on the program, we listen back to our earlier conversation with investigative journalist Murray Carpenter about his book, Sweet and Deadly, about how Coca-Cola's products and practices have caused widespread harm. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.